Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth. Your retirement dreams can become reality if you have a plan. I specialize in retirement and legacy planning. We provide custom solutions to help you navigate through your finances today while helping you build a strong financial portfolio for tomorrow. Take control of your financial future. Call me, Mike Venaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Grand Hotel of Go. Here we go. Air music. I forgot the music. Go ahead. There we go. We got to do it. The Cape May.
On the way to
there
Cape
we go. There we go. All right. That was seamless. Nailed it.
I fell in
professional
love
talk
with
radio
you.
Right there. Look at that.
On the way to
there
Cape
you go.
May.
All right. We're live at the Grand Hotel. Welcome back. I'm so glad you're here today.
I was
this is great stuff.
As we drift by sea.
Yeah, the bar is open.
My heart was gone.
Go up and say hi to Lee and Michael. They have a special
when
drink for everybody. And a happy birthday to Mike Montemero. Happy birthday, buddy. There you go.
Harbor skies were blue.
All right. Thank you, Justin. I want to welcome back to the show because there's another fake race hoax. Perfect timing for my next guest. You know him from John Stossel, from being retweeted by Elon Musk, being followed by J.D. Vance, from national TV, from all over the place. He's the author of Hate Crime Hoax and his newest book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. He's Dr. Wilfred Riley, everybody. Yes.
Yeah, great to be on the line, Rich.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well, just living life.
All right. Well, I got a news report here from Action 5 in Memphis. Memphis, Tennessee, not far from where you came from, Nashville. Yep.
Okay.
This is another fake race hoax. So this is a report from Action 5 in Memphis. I'm going to play this for you, and then we'll get your reaction to this as the author of Hate Crime Hoax. Cut 27. Take a listen.
Breaking news tonight. Rhodes College says the person who left racist messages on campus has now admitted to leaving those messages. They were discovered earlier this month near the National Pan-Hellenic Council Plaza, which is the only space on campus that pays tribute to the historically black sororities and fraternities at Rhodes. The signs led to a silent protest last week there in the library. In a statement, Rhodes says the perpetrator reported the act with the intention of placing the blame on someone else. That person has since taken responsibility for the message. This matter has caused enormous pain to our community, and we are taking appropriate steps to hold this individual accountable, including all legal avenues that may be available to us. That a statement from Rhodes College tonight.
All right. Your thoughts, Dr. Wilfred Riley, as the expert in Fugazi hate crimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost all of these that you see on a college campus are going to not be real. I mean, this is obviously there are real hate crimes. If you get jumped outside a hip hop club or a country bar by five people of another race, that probably actually happened, if that's what the police report says. But we've been seeing this kind of stuff on the campus for decades now. I mean, I wrote the book back in 2018 for Regnery Press. The rate of this hasn't slowed down at all. So when you see something like the Black Fraternity Monument, which usually has Black Fraternity pledges around it, protecting it, has been defaced with racial insults. I mean, there are two possibilities. Like, one, some crafty Nazi has managed to kind of sneak through the step line and, you know, draw that backward swastika on the thing or whatever. Or two, it is, I mean, you called it a fugazi. It is a hoax. It is some kind of prank from another group. Greek organization, or more often it's someone trying to create the image of a lot of racial tension on campus. And for complicated reasons, we see that very often today.
Now, my test for whether or not a hate crime is real is very simple. It is, okay, if you hear the reports of a hate crime, like somebody said, like, there's a noose in a tree. If you never hear a follow-up story, you know it turned out to just be a shoelace or you know what I mean? Or but if it was real, you would have national media all over it, because I think they learned the lesson possibly after Jussie Smollett, but I'm not quite sure if they did. They were all in on this moment, and then it blew up in their faces. But they still report on this stuff, even though it turns out to be fake. So I always think about it like that. If you get an initial report, but then you don't get a follow-up report, then you know it's a fake.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing is that what they learned from Jussie Smollett doesn't seem to be not to report the initial thing that's probably a hoax. What they learned seems to be not to report the exposure that it is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So the thing that kind of put egg on the media's face with Jussie Smollett was that the guy told this crazy story. Like, I was jumped by white supremacists walking through kind of the young business person's district of Chicago. You know, I fought off two big guys while I was holding a tuna sandwich, so on. They told that crazy story, but then they honestly documented the follow-up, which is that two buddies of Jussie's from the gym who were Nigerian had been paid to beat him up. And right, the whole thing became kind of one of the legendary stories of all time. You know, Jussie Smollett is like Benedict Arnold now for a guy that fakes a racial incident. So I think now, yeah, you're right. They'll do the initial story and they'll say something like "was reported" to give it a little more credibility. And then you'll just never see the follow up again. The ultimate example of this, by the way, is the text messages that were supposedly sent to tens of thousands of college students. One of my students actually got one. But after President Trump was elected last time, where all of these Black student leaders were apparently told they were going to be made into slaves again and so on. And this actually was pretty offensive. And the actual feds got involved and they looked for the person that did it. And then it just totally stopped. There's just dead silence on this. And my assumption would be that they found the guy. And again, it's like multiracial fraternity man or something. Like, it had nothing to do with racism whatsoever, and it would be damaging to kind of a public narrative to just say that.
Well, didn't Joe Biden say they're going to put you all back in chains? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, Joe Biden's excuse for that is that he was talking about Wall Street banking regulations or something, but he kept throwing in these slavery metaphors, and I don't think it was an accident. He was speaking to about an 80% Black business audience. And yeah, he said they're going to put you back in chains, and then he added something like regulatory chains.
Yeah,
but yeah, the entire right pitch of the Democratic Party to minorities
for
the past
again with inflation, you know, it's
higher
like that
taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but you know, like, everybody gets it, you know, and it's, but this has been the Democratic Party's pitch to minorities for the past 30, 40 years. I mean, the Republicans pitch to working class whites too, but the Democrats go way over the top with it. And I think with Kamala Harris, where you had this woman who, I don't have any issues with her ethnicity, but who's Indian and Jamaican, kind of cosplaying sort of a Black American civil rights leader. You know, she's a former prosecutor by actual background and so on. And she was sort of doing this routine. I think a lot of people, especially minority men, had just sort of had enough of it. So, I mean, you saw, you know, big Trump won 54% of Hispanics. 65% of Native Americans. That's not just men, by the way, but 27% of black men. Mm-hmm. So the routine's been tried for a long time. It does seem to be getting less successful, which kind of gives me some hope.
So I said the other night that I think Trump's victory marked the end of woke. I saw an article today that said we're entering the post-woke era. And Justine Bateman, the actress, who I had a huge childhood crush on, and she had a huge childhood crush on me, true story.
Of course.
Obviously. She was on Megyn Kelly's podcast the other day, and she was talking about the mob mentality that we've all been experiencing all these years and how it has to end. And she said, look, my values haven't changed, but everybody else's values changed. And, you know, we've all been walking on eggshells for the last 4 years. So I agree with that analysis. And I do think we might be entering a post-woke America after 4 years of feeling like you can't say hello to someone in the hallway because they might sue you for sexual harassment, you know?
Yeah,
so what's your sense
of that? I think that's true to some extent. I mean, I actually think this stuff moves in cycles, I would say. So, I mean, I remember in 1994, I was a high school freshman or sophomore or something, and the movie PCU came out and was like number two or three in the country.
Yeah.
And people were just making fun of the ridiculousness of what Dinesh D'Souza roasted in A Liberal Education, like the blue-haired college kids marching. This was the oi punk era. This was like third-wave feminism. And after that, and after a couple other things, like the Republicans took the House in 96, people, you know, consistently said political correctness is done. And it was for like 8 years. But the thing with these movements is that they're basically cyclical in nature. Like, the problem with free democratic societies is that they don't actually tend to produce equal outcomes. So it's pretty easy for people that have, I won't say communist, but sort of, you know, training in civic dissent to get people angry by saying, well, okay, we hear that America's fair, but black people report more racism than whites, or Hispanics are making less money than both blacks and whites. There aren't as many female fighter pilots as there are male ones. How are we going to fix that? And that's the core ideology behind both woke and PC. Like, the whole thing with wokeness is the idea that society is set up to oppress you, mm-hmm. and that gaps in performance kind of reflect or show that oppression. So we've kind of beaten it back now. I mean, it just got too silly. It became obvious that a lot of the examples that were being presented weren't real. I think the hate crime hoax has contributed to that. But I'm pretty sure in 10 years or so, another version of that ideology will come along, because life is never going to be perfect. Why are there more, kind of last line, but why are there more female nurses? Why are there more male soldiers? There are always going to be people that think that's a problem, rather than sort of, you know, how God or the gods willed it.
Right. Right, right, right. And the other thing, too, is that one of the crazy things they're doing in San Francisco is the public health department has hired a weight czar to go in there and tell people who are very obese they should embrace that, but also to change the culture in the workplace, where you should not be allowed to ask people like, where'd you go to dinner last night? Because it might be offensive. Or, hey, I went to the gym this morning. I had a great workout. Can't say that because it might be offensive to some. I'm not joking. Like, this is a real thing, and they want to change the culture. And I guess the question is, how soon until somebody's heating up something in the break room microwave and you go, wow, that smells delicious, until they go to HR and report you because they're, you know, they're doing keto and you were going on about how great pasta is, you know?
Yeah, well, I think so. First of all, the weight czar thing is just independently very funny. Like, the San Francisco weight czar is a woman who weighs maybe 250 pounds. She has a slide presentation you can find on YouTube on cake microaggressions.
Yes, cake microaggressions. You know, like, if you don't get enough frosting, that's a microaggression.
Well, no, but it's also like, if you point out, like, you're going to have another piece to a coworker, that's what's called fat phobic and so on. I don't know. I mean, I think this is an interesting one, because one of the side effects of what we're calling woke is that everyone sort of wants to be some kind of a minority, just logically in terms of how business competition works, because affirmative action works for you instead of against you if you're a member of a designated minority group. You know, if someone comes up and says, you don't know my struggles as a Hispanic bisexual man, you can come back and say, well, you don't know my struggles as a neurodivergent woman, do you? If you can claim one of these statuses. So I think, like, right now, fat people as a group are making a pitch for minority status. So I'm often in an executive role. One of the things we've seen the most being added to trainings is, like, weight awareness, fat awareness. The problem with this, though, one, you can just stop being fat by working out at any point. But also, two, Ozempic is hitting the market now, and insurance is starting to cover it. So I don't think the fat people are going to make it. I don't think they're going to get into, like, the next version of the Civil Rights Act. Because it's body positivity is going to end. Because I believe that, like, every fat rights activist would prefer to weigh 130 pounds or something reasonable. So as the drug that makes that possible becomes mainstream, I think that's a movement that's going to end.
And how much do you think the whole Make America Healthy Again movement contributed to Trump winning? Because I actually think there's a lot of suburban parents out there who are really, really upset with the crap that's in people's foods. There's a viral video today I saw of somebody setting an Oreo cookie on fire, and it doesn't melt. Now, I grew up eating fried Oreos at the Farm and Horse Show, and they were delicious. And let me just tell you, nothing better than a fried Oreo except maybe a fried Twinkie. As a result of that, I wore Husky jeans and had love handles growing up.
Okay.
Choices have consequences. But the Make America Healthy Again movement in general is this idea of, hey, people want to be able to give their kids healthier food. We want our kids to be able to go to school and have healthier choices so that our kids don't wind up on Ozempic. Because I also worry that that's going to become the shortcut for society, right? Back in the day, it was get on a bike and go play with your friends and come back when it's dark, or I open up the window and I yell for you. And by the way, if you're thirsty, drink from the friggin' hose. Now it's go to the school cafeteria, load up on unhealthy food, and then when you're 12, we'll give you a shot of Ozempic, tubby. And, you know, and then the other thing is we can't bully these kids anymore. And the only reason I ever lost weight in high school was literally I got tired of being bullied. And I said, I got to stop this. So I did Slim Fast in high school and lost weight. So, you know, all these things contribute. I think the Make America Healthy Again movement is a positive thing. I do think it contributed to Trump winning with suburban parents, for example.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, I think that there's just a practical kind of numbers point there. I mean, Bobby Kennedy Jr., he was polling at about 7%. And when he switched over to Trump and he went on stage and he publicly endorsed, you know, Big Orange, almost all of those voters switched to Trump rather than to Kamala Harris. So that's the health stuff definitely contributed to an overall public effect. I kind of agree with you on Ozempic. Like, we've got these kids at all kind of drugs already. I mean, a friend of mine refers to Ritalin and Adderall as chemical spanking, in that you can just make boys sit down and behave by sticking this pill in their orange juice that's basically speed. But, I mean, my own kind of cynical prediction would be that probably is where we're headed. We're probably going to move more in the direction of more chemicals than in the direction of, you know, better training and development for people.
Unfortunately,
but Bobby Kennedy played a big role.
Yeah, you're right. Dr. Wilfred Riley's with me, the author of Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. And I wanted to mention this. My daughter had a history test the other day.
Okay.
And one of the questions was on Thanksgiving. And I went to tell her that actually Thanksgiving is a proclamation from General George Washington thanking the Almighty for this country and for the end of the war and for the Constitution. But the correct answer was a dinner with the Pilgrims and the Native Americans. So that's what she had to write down if she wanted to get the answer right. So I'm just wondering, can you explain to us what would be the correct answer?
Well, could you run through a couple of those options again? Sorry, I was a little delay on my end.
So the first one being, I said Thanksgiving was a holiday proclaimed by George Washington to give thanks to the Almighty for our country, the Republic, the Constitution, and the war.
Oh, okay.
The correct answer, though, is it was a dinner with the Pilgrims and the Native Americans. You know, like they all went to the buffet together and had some turkey, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the simplification of education. I mean, you see this in mathematics too. I mean, that's somewhat correct. What would I do in that situation? I mean, what I would do as a kid is tell them the actual story, but also tell them to write down the technical right answer if I was aware of what was going on. It's sort of like, you know, how do you – I've had young academics ask me quite a few times, like, how should I respond to being asked for my diversity statement and so on, you know, applying to college jobs, applying to executive jobs. My response is usually just write down a bunch of nonsense and get the job. So I mean, in all honesty, like feminist myself, you know, like so there are two levels. Like, one, obviously we should understand reality. Two, do what you need to do to succeed in day-to-day life. But what we're doing in education is pretty problematic.
Well, my friend, I wish you a Merry Christmas. I know we can say that. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and thank you for joining us. And I hope many people will give Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me as a gift this year, because it is a must-read book. So Dr. Wilfred Riley, everybody, thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you to the audience.
Thank you for being on our show so much this year. We really do appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour. On the Rich Scioli Show, brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, a premier full-service resort and conference center, grandhotelcapemay.com.
All right, we are not taking a break. Don't go anywhere. This is our happy hour, brought to you by the Grand Hotel. Hey, zip it out there, will you? Quiet down. All right, listen, we're live on the air. We are live on the radio right now and streaming on the Odyssey app. So all of America's listening to this rowdy crowd, but it is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And this is a great place to be, obviously, as you can tell, with wonderful people, including the bartenders. They're a married couple named Michael and Lee, and they're wonderful people, and they are big fans of the show, and they have a special cocktail, so go and ask for it, and please tip generously. And if you're thinking about a New Year's, if you need some plans for New Year's, come here to the Grand. They have a great New Year's Eve package celebration for you, all right? So there you go. Here's another question for you as the show goes on today. I'm just wondering, does anybody think that part of what the government might be trying to do with this attempted shutdown is to keep Trump from being able to become president? Because now I'm starting to think that might be their ultimate play here. You know, like, they shut the government down, and then they're like, oh, we can't organize the inauguration now. So, oops, what can we do? I don't know. I just feel like they're up to something at this point. That's for sure. The latest on the spending bill is that there's going to be a vote soon. What do we have, Matt DeSantis? What's the latest for us you can tell us?
All right. So it was supposed to occur somewhere between 5:15 and 5:30. So they're running out of time for that initial estimate. It is divided into three parts now. It won't be just one large bill.
Okay.
There's no provision to raise the debt ceiling. So Donald Trump's not going to be thrilled with that. And so this is a report from the New York Times. They're saying Democrats are congregating beneath the Capitol for a closed-door meeting where they'll discuss whether or not to support the stopgap bill. Arriving members brushed off reporters' questions by saying they haven't had a chance to even read the text yet, so that doesn't sound great. And then it seems to be an open question as to whether a large number of Democrats will, I guess, support the legislation. Johnson is using a special procedure to fast-track the bill to the House floor, and it will require two-thirds of lawmakers present and voting to support the bill in order for it to pass.
Okay.
So I would suspect, if I'm a betting man, I'd say it probably is not going to pass.
Probably not going to pass. Show of hands if you think that's going to pass. Yeah, not so much. Show of hands if you want another drink, though. Let's see. There's a that's a much larger audience. Over there? Yeah. Well, what are you guys waiting for?
Waiting for my wallet.
Oh, the wallet. That's what it is. All right. Yeah, I don't blame them. I mean, somebody buy these young, beautiful ladies some drinks. There's four of them. Five. There's five beautiful ladies. Buy them drinks. Somebody. Come on. Cough it up, people. Come on. We're about to go into the golden age. Everybody's going to be flush with cash again. Do we have the trumpeteer here? I don't see him. I don't think he made it to the show. All right. That means then, Justin, can you find my Phil Murphy trumpets, please? Do you know the sound effect?
I'll look for it.
All right. Tell me when you have it. Governor Phil Murphy is warning us about the drones, okay? His royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable, has a warning to all New Jerseyans about the drones. You have it, Justin?
I'm looking through. It's not on any of the hotkeys.
Okay, it should be, but that's okay. It's definitely there. All right, we'll get it. Matt, can you... I've sent it to you before, but we'll send it again. It's all right. In the meantime, we'll play you another clip. Charlemagne the God asked Pete Buttigieg if the manned SUV-sized drones flying over New Jersey were part of an alien invasion. Take a listen.
One more quick. Donald Trump was on with Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. They had a whole conversation about aliens. Not the kind he wants to deport. Actual extraterrestrials. Then Cliff High said 39 days after that interview, we were going to start having an alien invasion. Around December 3rd, that's when all of these SUV-sized drones, which I've even seen, started getting seen over Jersey. Is it an alien invasion?
I mean, no disrespect to New Jersey when I say that I think it's very unlikely that an alien invasion would begin.
Watch your mouth. We lived it.
I know, but
damn.
But, no.
Nobody was coming to Jersey.
I love New Jersey. I'm just saying... I don't think that's the kind of main point of entry that an extraterrestrial, unless there's something we don't know about.
You don't
about.
Think aliens want to tan and go to the Jersey Shore or something like that?
It's wintertime.
Oh, you're right.
All right, now.
American Dream.
Thank you very much. That's enough. Thank you. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that if the aliens did come to Jersey, we would give a damn or we would just ask them to get out of the left lane if they were driving slow? What do you think the response from New Jerseyans would be? Because I was driving with my buddy AJ, who's a retired cop, and man, was he flashing his high beams today at a lot of PA plates, I'm just saying. So if it's like, you know, the Mars attacks and the Martians go fast in the left lane on the way to the Jersey Shore, I think we're fine with it. But if not, we're going to have a real problem, all right? And an international crisis on our hands. We have the horns. So, we're going to need to play this a couple times, Justin, just so you know. Where are you playing it, Matt? Who's playing it?
I can play it.
Yeah,
I have
play
it here.
All right, here we go. Let me do the official crier. Go ahead. No, that's not. Wait, hang on. That's not it. The one I said. Stop. My God, what is with your computer today?
I've got a million things up.
Play the one I sent.
That is the one you sent me.
That's the one I sent you?
That's the most recent one, yes. Right. That's as up to date as we've got.
All right, start it from the beginning.
All right.
Live shows always go a little haywire. What are you going to do?
Are you ready? Right.
I'm ready. All right. Peasants, gather around. His royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable, after letting thousands and thousands of illegal aliens into New Jersey, is worried now about aliens from outer space who might have worse hair than he does. All right, now play the clip.
But we do know now. I have a very, very, very high degree of confidence. Are we going to stay at it? You betcha. This has been 24/7. You never say never. Most of those sophisticated systems remain in New Jersey. But I want folks to know you should take a breath and know that you are safe. The part that should worry everybody out there is the vulnerability that we as a nation have to drone incursions.
That's certainly something Chris Smith was talking about, the congressman, on the show last week.
It's a big issue.
So the guy who locked down schools for 2 years because of a cold wants you to know we're all safe as these unexplained things crowd the skies on a nightly basis, and then goes around and goes, but at the same time, yeah, we're really vulnerable to a drone invasion. So I feel much better. How about you? So one more time with the trumpets, please. Peasants, gather around. His royal ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable, thinks you are the biggest idiots in the universe. Far dumber than any aliens that would ever come to New Jersey, you filthy peasants. All right. So I don't really trust that Phil Murphy is telling us the truth, but I do know one thing is that he's looking over the skies of Iowa, not the skies of New Jersey, because he wants to run for president of the United States. We have another update for you on the government shutdown. What's the update, Matt DeSantis? Read it for
us,
please.
So Hakeem Jeffries just told reporters that removal of the debt ceiling provision is a step in the right direction for Democrats to potentially support the bill on the floor tonight. But he said that this is a quote. We need to come out of the bill. I don't know what he's saying. We've got to evaluate.
Nobody knows what Hakeem Jeffries says.
We've got to evaluate the four corners of what remains in the legislation. So they're not quite there yet.
Okay. I don't know what that means. If anybody can translate that into English for me, I would love to understand it. Yeah. Yeah, give us more money. Give us more pork, basically. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Dr. Victoria Coates is going to join us, of course. She is Trump's former deputy national security advisor. Was there a terror attack in Germany today? And what do we know about the drones? We'll talk about all of that with Dr. Coates. Her new book is out, and very excited to have that conversation with her. And I want to tell you that Emmons Roofing and Siding is my go-to contractor for roofing, siding, doors, and windows. Reach out to Emmons today. 10% off in inflation relief discount for each and every one of my listeners. They serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore, and they're going to give you a great job on your home. Listen, when it comes to winter, you got to make sure that roof is ready to go. So if you have any issues with the roof, get it looked at now, please, now. And Emmons will give you a free roof inspection. They won't tell you you need a new roof if you don't, but if you do, Emmons is going to make sure that you have the right roof with the lifetime warranty of the Owens Corning shingle. So reach out to them today by going to emmonsroofing.com. Make sure you tell them I sent you. And remember, 10% off for every one of my listeners by going to emmonsroofing.com, emmonsroofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, she is the former deputy national security advisor to President Donald Trump. She is the author of a brand new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win, which features a foreword from Senator Ted Cruz. And it is out now officially. We're excited for her. She is Dr. Victoria Coates on X at Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend.
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you? How are things?
I'm doing great. We're having a great time, and congratulations that the book is out.
Yeah, it feels like I've either launched a battleship or had a baby, or maybe both.
Well, congratulations. I mean, you had your big launch in D.C. Tell us about that. How was that? How'd it go?
No, it was amazing, and I thank you for all your kind words about the book this week. We had Senator Cruz come over, and Dr. Kevin Roberts, who I know you know, interviewed the two of us about how brilliant we are, which is our favorite topic, both collectively and individually. So that was all very convivial. But one of the things that meant the most to me is not only did we have the deputy chief of mission, the number two at the Israeli embassy there, but we also had ambassadors from Azerbaijan and from UAE, so obviously Muslim countries, as well as representation from embassies such as Jordan and Egypt. And it was great to have everybody together in support of a book that just aims to support peace. So it was a really warm night.
Congratulations. I'm very happy for you. And I know you worked really, really hard on it. And it couldn't come at a better time, honestly. It could not come at a better time because we need it, especially as we transition now into the new administration. And you played such a pivotal role in helping keep America safe during the last administration. Can you give us an update on what occurred in Germany today?
Oh, just a horrific situation. I think we all remember a couple years back there was a terrible, terrible car ramming at a Christmas market in Berlin, actually. This is more over toward East Germany. And again, a car deliberately went into one of those very charming, picturesque German Christmas villages and markets, killed at least 11 people was the last number I saw. The guy who did it was a Saudi national who had emigrated, obviously, to Germany and was carrying out a terrorist attack on Christmas. And you know, that would be the absolute antithesis of what we had at Heritage on Tuesday night, you know, where we had so many people of different faiths celebrating together. Here we had, you know, a very hateful act of murder and destruction right in the holidays. And, you know, it is a grim reminder of what is potentially in our country after 4 years of the Biden-Harris open border policies, and why, you know, my former colleague Tom Holman and President Trump can't get in their seats fast enough.
Yeah, I agree. Do we have any sense, Dr. Coates, of the drone situation and any updates on that? Because I had Congressman Jeff Van Drew on it on the show earlier today. He talked about the motherships that are capable of launching these drones, like the one that came out of Iran. And he said China has them, too. And of course, the reaction in the media is to mock and belittle that as some sort of crazy conspiracy theory. But it's not a crazy conspiracy theory, obviously. Have you learned anything? Can you give us any updates? Because we're here in Jersey and Pennsylvania, and we're all thinking to ourselves, we know the government is lying to us. Help us understand what's happening here.
No, this is amazing. And Congressman Van Drew has been a hero in this, trying to get information to the American people. And as you said, for his troubles, he has been mocked and called a crazy person. And then, lo and behold, I guess yesterday, the FAA came out and said, we are actually banning drones over certain sensitive military installations, transportation hubs, that kind of thing, and we will shoot them down if they violate this order because of national security threats. So these aren't all benign fixed-wing aircraft. And I dug into it a little bit and discovered that the FAA actually indicted an Iranian national, or not the FBI indicted the Iranian national in September, who had been a member of the IRGC, who had managed to emigrate to America, created a new past for himself, and became an FAA contractor. This is real. This happened at the end of September. And
amazing.
So there are Iranian nationals who are messing with the FAA. So I think Congressman Van Drew deserves a medal for drawing attention to this, not kind of public mockery.
Iranians are messing with the FAA. Like I've not seen that reported in any of the mainstream corporate media sources whatsoever. All I've seen is them mocking him, and you got Phil Murphy, the governor, coming out, King, His Royal Ruggedness, King Philip the Unaccountable, I want to be respectful, coming out and saying, oh, Van Drew's crazy. But, I mean, what you just said right there at the FAA is incredibly concerning, because the FAA has the authority, allegedly now, to be able to patrol these skies, and that's not happening.
No, and that's the thing is we, you know, these institutions are being infiltrated by the enemies of America, coming into our country by whatever means, and, you know, getting past all of these vaunted checks that they talk about, background checks that they talk about. Well, you know, how many of these people are in here? How many of these people, you know, shaped the very permissive environment that we've had for at least the last month over New Jersey? And then you call people crazy for just asking questions. So I think there has to be, you know, more investigation into this. To my knowledge, President Trump canceled his trip up to Bedminster because of it, because he didn't want to be surveilled in his home in New Jersey. And that's a pretty serious statement right there, that the former president doesn't think he'll be safe under the current rules.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was just Trump's sarcasm and he was joking or not. But I don't think he was. I think he was genuinely saying that. Like, I, you know, they're flying over Bedminster. And so then the FAA comes out and puts out a no fly order over all these places. And I'm thinking to myself, the only people that are going to listen to that are the people that would be flying the drones that they're telling us are not hurting us, that we have nothing to worry about. So if we have nothing to worry about these drones, then what? Then explain to me then why we would have to have a no-fly zone.
It makes no sense,
right?
And the no-fly order specifically cites national security interests. So if this is American citizens doing it, you know, then can't you arrest them? And
yes.
If it's non-Americans, if it's hostile foreign agents, I mean, wouldn't we want to see some action taken against them as well?
Yeah,
I'm just baffled by the whole thing, Rich.
No, I am too, Dr. Victoria Coates. Dr. Coates is with me. Her new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How America and Israel Can Win, is out, hot off the presses. It's a big deal. It's a big dream come true for our buddy, Dr. Coates, Philadelphia's own, and we're very, very proud of her. And the other part of it, too, which I think is really crucial right now for everybody to understand, is that Justin Trudeau may wind up back in Cuba.
I was thinking
for
about
vacation.
You,
what? 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 For vacation, Dr. Coates. I mean,
it's an island paradise.
Yeah, it's a tropical island paradise, which he'll feel a very sense of culture and food and communism and fatherhood. You know what I mean? Like all those feelings, those nice
he'll
feelings
feel like
that Justin will have. Right, right, exactly. And this will be the first time that if he leaves as prime minister, it'll be the first time a Castro has not been in power in the Western Hemisphere since the 1950s.
It will be the dawn of a new day. And
that's right. Allegedly. Allegedly. Yeah. I got to just point that out. Yes.
Some people are saying, Rich, that this would be the case. So, it's really, I think, a good thing for Canada that they're finally waking up and that you do have a kind of silent majority who, what reason in that country. And a lot of this is blowback from the extremely draconian Green New Deal woke climate policies they've imposed, which have really done material damage to their economy, particularly in their energy sector, which is their bread and butter. And so you've got that causing a lot of the blowback. The Canadian dollar is tanking against the U.S. dollar. That's causing a lot of problems. They have a bad housing crisis because of jacked up prices on building materials. So, Canada is looking at a host of problems. And I think President Trump's offer to make them the 51st state might not be looking too bad. But they've got some really strong leadership. I don't know if you all have gotten all of these ads that we're seeing, but after his tariff, threat, suddenly we started getting bombarded by ads for Alberta, which is the big energy producing province, saying we're really nice, we love America, please don't be mean to us.
I don't think that was
a coincidence.
I think vacationing in the state of Canada would be great, and not having to show your passport like you used to not have to show your passport and just drive on up there would be great. I mean, they have good beer, great hockey, and if he's out, one less Cuban. So I mean, it makes sense for everybody. I think it would be great. But there's a deeper point here too, and this is something that Pierre Poilievre has pointed out. Justin Trudeau, who I know, I love that guy. Justin Trudeau
he's
the best. And Trudeau has no respect on the world stage. Like, everybody is mocking him and belittling him. And Trump just openly, my favorite is when Trump either fat shames Chris Christie, which I can never stop laughing at. Like the other day was a drone delivery of McDonald's. That's where all the drones were coming from, delivering to Chris Christie. I mean, just, and then when he mocks Trudeau as Governor Trudeau. On the world stage, he's mocking another world leader, this one in our backyard. And Poilievre's like, this is because nobody respects Justin Trudeau. Nobody respects the guy, and he's not wrong.
No, not at all. And I think Poilievre has had a lot of good things to say about what the direction he could take Canada and the idea that all Canadians are just inherently liberals and leftists, I think is clearly wrong. I'm old enough to remember Stephen Harper as a very strong conservative prime minister of Canada. And so if Poilievre does get in, which we all hope, and the no confidence vote could come as soon as next month. In my understanding. So, they could try to drag this out till next October, but it could happen in January. And if he comes in and starts talking about being serious about Canada's defenses, I know I've mentioned this, but it's worth mentioning again that the world's 10th largest economy spends exactly 1.38% of its GDP on defense while it's spending all of its time crying about how it's vulnerable to Russia through the Northern Passage. They need to get more serious about this. and really, really invest in their defenses, particularly in the Arctic. We need them to do that. We'll partner with them on it, but they need to have a leadership role there. And I think Poilievre is somebody who can actually do that. Now, I might take a little issue with the hockey. I don't know that they could actually get the Stanley Cup back unless they did become the 51st state. It's been a little time. But we'll see.
Yeah, the Canadians have not had a good run of it. That's for sure. And the Flyers are playing great. So I want to play a clip for you. This is Pentagon Major General Pat Ryder, the spokesman, discussing troop levels in Syria. This is like the time they found the couple hundred million dollars under the couch, and they're like, oh, look at this. Well, I guess we'll send it to Ukraine. It's kind of like a moment like that where he finds out that there's more.
$4 billion they found.
Right, I mean,
cushions.
$4 billion. What's a couple billion under the couch cushions among friends, Dr. Coates? This is cut 23, 21.
As you know, we have been briefing you regularly that there are approximately 900 U.S. troops deployed to Syria. In light of the situation in Syria and the significant interest, we recently learned that those numbers were higher. And so asked to look into it, I learned today that, in fact, there are approximately 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria. As I understand it.
Thank you, Matt. So that's fine, right? I mean, 900, 2,000, and the Pentagon's like, oh, you know what? Maybe we should check on that number. Oh, no, it's 2,000. How did the Pentagon not know how many troops were in Syria, Dr. Coates?
Well, that's the wording that was just bizarre to me. I mean, and it's like Admiral Kirby. You know, this sounds like Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
We just learned. I mean, I'm sorry. Somebody in that building made a decision to deploy at least another 1,100. And notice he says around 2,000. That could be anywhere between 2,000 and 2,600. And so we could be looking at triple the amount, roughly, that they had been claiming up until now. And the problem is there are a number of very principled folks in Congress who think they do not have the authority to be in Syria at all, let alone for the last now, what is it, 12 years? We've had a significant troop deployment there. And, you know, the big issue here, and I apologize for the alphabet soup here, but the HTS folk, who are the Turkish-backed militants who have taken over the government, are the sworn enemy of the SDF in the east of the country, who have been the folks that our soldiers have, or deployed soldiers have been supporting. And they HTS announced the other day that they are, one of their strategic goals is the elimination of the SDF. So what does that mean? Does that mean we now have 2,000 guys who could be at the mercy of, you know, two bands of Islamist militants? It's deeply murky. And who, as you said, who's making these decisions? They're suddenly finding out these things. It doesn't sound like it's being done at all deliberately or strategically. And I think that's going to be one of the first questions President Trump will and should ask the minute he gets back into office is, what the heck are those 2,000 people doing in Turkey or in Syria?
Yeah. Well said. All right. And before I let you go, Dr. Coates, I got to ask another question, which is, when thinking in terms of national security for the United States of America and thinking about the border wall that Joe Biden is selling on auction.com right now, where literally, I think I went by a Philly auction site the other night in the Northeast and they were selling parts of the border wall. And Trump has gone to court, filed an amicus brief and coming out and saying, we got to stop this right now. We got to stop this right now because this is ridiculous and this is unfair and it's going to cost us even more money. How is the Biden administration getting away with selling and auctioning off parts of a wall that they damn well know President Trump is going to build? Or is this just more proof that what the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday about what I think is the greatest political cover-up of our time, that Joe Biden's brain has been in alphabet soup for 4 years and they've been hiding this from us?
Probably a combination. I think they're trying to bury as much evidence as they can. They're trying to get rid of it on their way out the door so you can't say, wow, what did you do? You let millions, if not billions of dollars of material just rot and rust in the desert for years. You didn't take care of it. So now you have to sort of bury it. I suppose we're lucky it's not all on eBay. But I do think that Wall Street Journal report you referenced is the most important story that no one will read over the holidays. But hopefully we can bring some more attention to it. They said this started in the spring of 2021. So he was never compass mentis. And they
right.
looked like a bunch of people were starting to blame Afghanistan on it, which, I mean, I would certainly strongly agree with. But they all knew. And all of these people have stayed in the discussion of how he never met with his cabinet secretary. How do you go on being Secretary of Defense for 4 years when you never talk to the commander in chief? And you know, that nobody left their post, nobody resigned, nobody raised a red flag. Talk about Article 25, you know, and when you might want to actually consider doing that. You know, the vice president remained at her post the whole time.
Yeah.
Defending him, saying that he was just fine. And so, you know, I think this is, you know, one of the reasons that I'm glad the book came out when it did is it details a lot of their bad behavior on the Middle East, in particular Israel and Iran. But I think we have to keep those memories fresh of what they've done, because they're all going to be back in 2 years looking to run for president. And we need to remember this is what they were capable of from 2021 to 2025.
Well said, my friend. Well, listen, you've been a great friend of the show this last year. I thank you for coming on with us almost every week and whenever there's breaking news. And we're very excited for your book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win, which features a foreword from Senator Ted Cruz, a man you know quite well. And I thank you for your friendship. Philadelphia thanks you. And we look forward to getting together with you in person, Dr. Coates, and having a great year. And I think good things are to come for us, no doubt about it.
I think so, too. So Merry Christmas, Rich and Matt and Justin. Merry Christmas to the Zioli Army. Have a wonderful night tonight in Cape May, and we'll talk to you guys in 2025.
All right, Dr. Coates. All right. You bet.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. Now, let me just say, at the end of the show tonight, we're going to take pictures. There's a big board up there. But the next break, I'm going to try to run to the bathroom. I share a lot with this audience. I'm not being rude, but I've been sitting here for 3 hours drinking water. Daddy's got to go see a man about a horse. All right? So, not trying to be rude, since I know everybody wants to say hi, and I want to say hi as well. But we'll, so at the end of the show, we can go up there, we can take some pictures, and I'm not bringing that into the restroom. I'm not, what am I, Frank Drebin? Drebin? We'll take pictures, and I would love to do that at the end. It'll be a lot of fun for us, but I do have to go to the restroom. I want to just say hello to Bob, who's the owner of the Grand Hotel, and wearing what I think is the, we can all agree, the ugliest. I mean, the most beautiful Christmas jacket of all time. I had one even uglier than that that I was going to wear today. No, I mean, more beautiful than that. I just didn't want to take away from your grandeur. Can you show everybody the jacket, Bob? Could you please stand up for us and show everybody the jacket? Look at that handsome devil. Look at you, you handsome devil. Look at that. Anyway, it's beautiful. So, we got a big fourth and final hour straight ahead. There's breaking news on Capitol Hill. I'm going to give you all the breaking news. We'll give you the latest on the spending bill. The vote is happening as we speak. And so we're live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Don't go away.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.